This is an iHeart podcast.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Do you smell that, Chris? That's the smell of not just donuts. That's the smell of an awesome Thursday coming soon. I say soon because I don't know if I want to get to this story about the guy who got killed by his cockfighting rooster. It's ugly out there. We have bad, bad CNN ratings. We have United States intelligence services, our spies, looking at you and me as domestic extremists. And John Kerry being a hypocrite. Are you surprised? I'll tell you the real story behind that picture of John Kerry here in a few. But first, it is the Jesse Kelly Show, 877-377-4373. I hope everybody had a happy and safe St. Paddy's Day. We Irish are, well, that's really all we're known for. Now, in all seriousness, I've been told Ireland is one of those places, and when I say we Irish, my last name's Kelly, clearly there's Irish in there, but we weren't raised, you know, Irish and your Irish heritage and your Irish American. That's not how we were raised at all. But I've been told by everyone who's ever been there that Ireland is a blast. But I don't really want to go. Is that weird? It's not a beach. It's not a lake. It's not a ski vacation. It's not a cruise. It's not, what is it? I can only drink so much Guinness. What am I going to do there? But anyway, first, let's rewind a bit today. When I say a bit, we're going to talk about the fall of the greatest city of all time. Is that fair? Constantinople, the year is 1453. And when I say the greatest city of all time, Napoleon agreed with me. Napoleon looked at this place and said, if the world was one country, Constantinople would be its capital. We have talked about this city before. We will talk about it again. And it's map time. Pull out your phone. Pull out your computer. Unless you're in your car, it's not that important. Don't die over it. Look up Istanbul. That's modern-day Istanbul, Turkey. Look at it. Look at that perfect piece of geography. Holding the gateway between the Mediterranean and the Black Sea. Connected by land to Europe, connected by just a little stretch of water to Asia. It's one of those things where you could be the worst investor in the history of mankind and screw up almost everything, but if you were smart enough to buy some Apple stock in the year 1980 or something and just hang on to it, you're stupid rich today. All you have to do, if you get that chunk of land today, yesterday, 1,000 years from now, if you get that chunk of land, all you have to do, just hang on to it. Just hang on to it. But it's more than just what you're looking at on a map. It's more than just that 2D, 30,000-foot view. It's a perfect, perfect natural fortress. You'll see this. I want you also on your map. Don't mean to be giving you all kinds of homework today, but it helps. I want you to look at that stretch of water right above it, known as the Golden Horn. All right, so you have Istanbul. You see the stretch of water running kind of northwest to southeast. That stretch of water, it helps wrap the entire city in water. You're surrounded by on three sides by water, if you're an ancient fortress city like it was, with only how many routes do you see in? On land? One. And the water that's out there in that little strait, the Bosphorus Strait, brutal, brutal currents, brutal water. So it's not as if you can just amphibiously land anywhere, anyhow. Perfect natural fortress, perfect for geography. It was like God decided this is going to be a very important place. And by the year 1453, the Byzantines were dang happy it was a perfect natural fortress. Now, who were the Byzantines? Let's do just a brief recap on them. They were the Romans. There's your recap. No, in all seriousness, what happened was Rome, as you know, greatest empire of all time, eventually towards the end breaks up into the Eastern and Western Roman Empire. Western Roman Empire kind of goes away, bad leadership, bad economy. Eastern Roman Empire keeps on keeping on, becomes a Christian nation, makes Constantinople its capital. They thrive. We know them as the Byzantines, but anytime anyone tells you about the Byzantines, make sure you know, don't be that person who has to correct everybody, but make sure you know, at least in the back of your head, the Byzantines never called themselves Byzantines. If you asked any one of them, they would have said, we're Romans. We're Rome. This is Rome. What are you talking about? This is Rome. But by the year 1453, they are at the very, very, very end of their empire. And it's not that they didn't have a great run. The Byzantines themselves had a great run. Good people, good run, good rulers. But time just has a way of whittling away at you. Empires crumble. You lose this, you lose that. You lose this war, this bad treaty, this bad ally. It wasn't going well. And the fall of the Byzantines, or the crumbling of the Byzantines, was met by, and I guess on some small part you could say caused by, the rise of this Asian nomadic steppe people known as the Ottomans. Yes, that's right. They were essentially a vassal state of Genghis Khan and the Mongols. That's how the Ottomans began. But warrior-like people, Muslim people, devoutly Muslim, and they start rising. They come up with this governmental system of a sultan, and you should know this about the Ottoman Empire, underrated empire, by the way. We don't talk about it as much here in America because they were Muslim, and that's not our native religion, and therefore we just don't care as much about it. But extremely underrated empire, fascinating people. Yeah, it's gigantic people. That's right, Chris, gigantic. Interesting government system where the sultan was all-powerful. I mean, there's no legislature here. The sultan is the religious leader. He's the national leader. He's not a god king. Remember, they're a Muslim empire, but thought to be God's right-hand man at the same time. They had a harem there, which, again, don't worry, don't turn it off. It's a family show. A kind of a different kind of a harem. Definitely a different kind than you would picture like in Genghis Khan's harem. The harem in the Ottoman Empire was essentially a college. a housing project. Well, when I say housing project, I mean a high-end one. Yes, you would take female slaves and have them be part of it for the reasons that I'm not going to go into. You can use your imagination. But this was something many women, if not all, sought out. Why? You were not chained up like some monster. You were brought in, fed, educated, clothed in the finest things. Their young boys were raised here, educated here, tutoring, languages, mathematics. It was like central hub for people who were going to be the next generation. We're not done yet talking about the Ottomans and, Biden might be in a bit of trouble. Hang on.
Missed out? Catch up. JesseKellyShow.com.
Jake's Mint Chew will help you quit dipping tobacco. Frankly, it can help you quit smoking tobacco. What is it? Well, it's chew. You put it in your lip, or they have my preferred thing, the CBD pouches that really help take the edge off when you're trying to quit. And it's all natural. There's no tobacco. There's no nicotine. This isn't some cheap nicotine replacement that's replacing one bad habit with another bad habit. This is here, good for you, good tasting, and it is the way to get off of it because I know what it's like. I've been there. You know, I've been there 1,000 times. I know what it's like quitting. It sucks. I didn't even want to quit. I just knew I had to. Jake's Mint Chew is the way to go. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Use the promo code Jesse. That's J-E-S-S-E. That actually gets you 20% off. You can find me on social media at JesseKellyDC on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Locals. Don't forget about the Locals thing because I'm going to get run out of the other one soon. We're going to talk about a cockfighting rooster killing its owner, and this is not going to dissuade me, Chris, from wanting to go see a cockfight at all. If anything, it makes it even spicier. We have new details about the Capitol riot, about the Black Lives Matter Antifa riots over the summer, and they're revealing details. It's a stinging indictment of our side, and we're going to have to address that here in a few. But back to the Ottoman Byzantium Roman thing. The Ottomans are rising fast. They are highly intelligent. It's an advanced society. Like I said, their mathematics were outstanding. Their engineering was outstanding. And they were highly aggressive. These people would, of course, it's always sold as on behalf of God or Allah or something. But almost all these conquests, yes, there's part of that to it. But almost all of it is just good old-fashioned human greed and human nature. It's easy to sell to the masses. This is what Allah wants. But in truth, you just want to be the king of the world. And they were very, very aggressive. And Christian Europe was extremely concerned about it. They start chopping away at the Byzantines and chopping away at the Byzantines. They're taking this empire. They're having multiple fights with them and winning pretty much all of them. Soon the Byzantines are paying tribute to the Ottoman Empire. But the Ottoman Empire, it's amazing the Byzantines couldn't see this, or maybe they did and just lacked the power. The Ottomans were never going to settle for anything less than capturing the greatest city in the world. But there's a problem with that. Many have tried. They pretty much all failed. The city had been besieged 23 times and still stood. Again, the perfect natural fortress. One land way in, treacherous waters around the outside. They had built, and on the land portion especially, they'd built this double layer wall, 40 feet high, moats. The city was thought to be impregnable. The Ottomans, however, had a plan, and their plan was this. We're going to take our superior fighting force, our superior numbers, I should say, and we're going to take this new weapon we have, and let's talk about this new weapon quickly. It was a cannon, unlike any cannon you've ever seen in your life. Yes, it was gigantic, Chris. You see, there was a Christian mercenary who would sell his talents, as mercenaries do, as frankly you and I do, right? You and I sell our talents. It just our talent doesn't happen to be death. This Christian mercenary at one point had approached the emperor of the Byzantine Empire and said, hey, I have this huge cannon that is going to be a game changer. Would you like to pay me a large amount of money to make this for you? And the Byzantine Empire, because they didn't have the economy they used to had and things had changed and something like that wasn't a priority, looked at this guy and said, no, I don't think I will. Thanks, bye. So mercenaries do mercenary things, and this man goes, knocks on Mehmet II's door and says, hey, Ottomans, you guys seem to be conquering a lot of stuff. You know what would help with that? A gigantic cannon you can pay me for. And Mehmet II, an ambitious man, anxious to make a name for himself, says, oh yeah, come on in. This cannon was 27 feet long. The cannonball the cannon shot was 1,200 pounds. One cannonball. It was 30 inches in diameter. A man can crawl inside of it. It was the most jaw-dropping thing ever. When you're going up against impregnable walls in an impregnable city, having a brand new super weapon sure helps. Another thing the Ottomans had, something we'd never dug into on the show, Janissaries. Now, there's not really a defense of this practice. It was horrible. Certainly not a bright, sunny moment in the history of Christian persecution, but we also don't do that thing where we whine about things that happen to other people and not ourselves. We just don't do that on this show. The Janissary system in the Ottoman Empire was this. They would conquer lands and not necessarily force everybody into Islam. Oh, you're a Christian city, that's fine. You can keep doing that. But we're going to run a lot of the things around here, and we're going to be back from time to time to pick up some things. What were they coming back to pick up? Young boys. They would walk into a town. Towns had registries for the boys who had been baptized. The Ottomans would grab the young boys in a city, find out who'd been baptized, and don't think you could just lie about it. The Ottomans were more than happy to torture you to death. They were huge on impalement. We'll get to that in a minute. But they would round up the young boys. They didn't want orphans. They thought orphans were a liability. They would pick the most well-raised kids they could find, best parents, best families. They would examine the boys for physical defects, pick the best, brightest, strongest boys, and simply took them away. Where did they take them? They took them back to the Ottoman Empire, where they forced them to convert, and then they brought them into the military. It was a gigantic slave army, and they trained these guys to be elite soldiers, an army of slave troops, but studs, and I mean absolute studs. They were supposed to be some of the finest fighters in the history of the world. Janissaries were the bomb. Obviously not a great practice, probably not one you'd ever want to repeat, but that's what it was. Now, who's Mehmet II? He's a man who took over as Sultan at 11. not ready to do so. Well, I shouldn't say took over as Sultan at 11. He starts governing a big portion of the empire at 11. He's officially made Sultan at 19. He had to get in a big fight with the Hungarians. He actually went and asked his father, after he'd just taken over, to come back and command his Sultan armies for him. He didn't think he was ready. Now that didn't look good to the Europeans. They started disrespecting this young man, and that turned out to be a bad idea. He was ambitious. He was smart. He was ruthless. Which brings us back to our present time at 1453. Mehmet II starts taking over the villages around Constantinople. He starts building castles around Constantinople, whole castles. And the Byzantines lack the strength to do anything about it. He's essentially laying a siege by the land. Eventually, he just flat out does it, lays siege to the city. There are about 7,000 fighters, technically 5,000 inside Constantinople, but he got 2,000 more. It doesn't matter. But the emperor pops up and says, Europe, Christians, I don't know if you know this, there's a bunch of Muslims at our door, and they're trying to murder all of us. It might be a good time for you to come down and lend a hand. And it's kind of cool. People did come from all over. Just young men grabbed a weapon and came on down. But here's the thing about that. We'll talk about that in a second. And a no-go zone in a major U.S. city. Why aren't we talking about it? Hang on.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
John Kerry gets busted without a mask. Why? Well, we've talked about it before. You should already know why. And it's not just because he's a hypocrite. Yes, he's that. We'll talk about that here in just a minute. I'm going to wrap up the fall of Constantinople here. Now, Constantinople does have about 5,000 to 7,000 people. I say 5,000 to 7,000 because they had 5,000. They get about 2,000 people coming from the rest of Europe. But the other kings in Europe, they see this as a lost cause. They don't send huge armies. They could have saved Constantinople if they had sent huge armies, and they wouldn't do it. I do, however, think it's really cool, really, really cool, that a bunch of individual dudes just saw it as their duty, grabbed a weapon, and went down to die. It has a real Alamo feel to it. By the way, before I forget, 877-377-4373, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Remember, tomorrow is an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Hammer me with your questions. They do not have to be political. They're more than welcome to be, but it can be about anything. We have fun on Fridays. Food, history, politics if you want, relationships, vacations, weird death scenarios, which you apparently love. We'll do that tomorrow. Back to Constantinople. So you have Mehmet II with an unknown number of troops. They say about 30,000 outside of the city, a bunch of Janissaries. You have 7,000 troops inside Constantinople. And Mehmet II is not a man who's going to let this go. This is a human being who is utterly ruthless. He used to dress himself up in disguise in his own empire and sneak out into the city to hear what people were saying. And that's very difficult to get an honest answer when you're the all-powerful Sultan. What are people saying? So he would dress up and sneak out. That's fine. Okay, good. Good for him. Yeah, good for him until somebody recognized him. If anyone ever recognized him, he would promptly stab him to death right then and there. Ruthless human being. He sets up around the city, and the Byzantines, to their credit, make this an absolute brawl. They have a huge moat around the city. Sadly, I must tell you, moats are not filled with water and crocodiles, as I was led to believe as a child. I know, Chris, I was devastated when I found out. In fact, lots of time there's no water in it at all. A moat is simply this, and I didn't really take this in until the first time I saw a real castle. When you're standing at the base of the castle, or towards the base of the castle, and you're looking up at the walls, if you're a sick human being like me, you're thinking about what it would have been like to assault said walls. You're looking up at them, you're thinking, oh, wow, that guy would be shooting arrows at me, throwing rocks at me, pouring hot pitch on me. I'm trying to get to the wall, then I'm trying to get up the wall. How difficult would that be? A huge ditch towards the base of the wall makes it so much more ominous, so much more difficult. And they would put stakes in there. It just slows everything down. It's not that you're going to die from the ditch itself. Remember, you have armor on. It's heavy. You're going down into a ditch, trying to get up the other side. You have equipment with you. A big moat makes it a big problem. The Ottomans, as they surround this city, they start digging mines from about 250 yards away. Now, this is a fascinating process I've always been blown away by. No modern equipment. You don't have modern excavating stuff. You dig a tunnel from far away from the walls, and you tunnel your way underneath the city. That is creepy. And you're trying to fill in the moat, and there's something else. Contrary to popular belief, you didn't, if you were the defending army, you're the ones inside the city, you didn't just sit back and think, oh, they're building a mine, that sucks, they're going to get us soon. You would often, especially if you're the Byzantines and they were aggressive and they didn't have many men, but they were very good, you would ride out and you would collapse the mine. If you saw they didn't have enough people defending it, you would ride out and assault it and kill a bunch of them and go back in. If you saw they were filling in a moat, you'd ride out, kill a bunch of them. And the Byzantines are doing this regularly. This is a brutal siege, an absolutely brutal siege. But Mehmet II is not your average Joe. He has thought this through long and hard. You know that golden horn we talked about? Mehmet II couldn't get his ships there initially. And then he figured out, wait a minute. I'll just haul my ships over land and drop them in the golden horn, putting me as the naval power on the backside of it. And he does it. This is apparently something they still celebrate to this day in Turkey. They will recreate the hauling of the ships. It's that famous. It gave him a side of the city that was supposed to be just for the Byzantines. And the gun. Let's not forget about the gun. The gigantic gun begins firing. And it begins shattering this formerly impregnable city. Shattering these walls. 6-7 weeks of this kind of pounding, fighting. And Constantine, to his credit, he's riding out from the city occasionally with his men, and attacking Muslim villages, Ottoman villages, for no other reason than to kill some of them and take slaves. This is enraging the Ottomans even more. It's driving them absolutely crazy. But he is not a man sitting back crying in his hands. He is trying to fight as hard as he can. But once the Ottomans got that foothold in the Golden Horn, and once that big gun still started pounding, the end was probably inevitable, although difficult. The Ottomans were still seeking a peace, as long as it was a kind of peace where they were still running everything. The Byzantines refused. The cannon pounds away and pounds away and pounds away. And Constantine had a general who was really inspiring the men. He'd led the defense of the city. I'm not going to go into the name because it's Italian. You're going to forget it anyway. The general eventually gets himself shot. He's hurt. He is the inspirational leader of this army. He asks Constantine, he says, take me off the battlefield, I'm hurt. Constantine says, no, we can't. You can't go. If you go, the whole army's going to lose heart. And he said, no, take me out of here. They took him out, and a bunch of troops left with him. Right at the time when a gigantic segment of the wall was crumbling. The Ottomans throw their worst troops into the hole first, knowing a bunch of them are going to die, and they do. And then they send in the Janissaries. And the Ottomans eventually get through this hole. It is said, I don't know if I believe this because it has a real movie-like feel to it, but it is said that Constantine mounts a horse, strips off all of his armor, keeps a sword in his hand, and just charges into the huge crowd of Janissaries, and that's how he dies. Now, the reason I'm not sure if I believe that, I mean, it certainly may be true. The guy apparently acquitted himself very well. The reason I'm not sure if I believe that is, in general, when I hear stories like that that sound like they're out of the movies, I think that some writer decided to fluff it up a little bit. But Constantinople fell. The year was 1453. And I want you to imagine this, because this is the only way I could think of to make it real for you. I want you to imagine you woke up tomorrow morning and China had taken over New York City. What am I talking about? I'll tell you what I'm talking about. Hang on.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What, look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps. And then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Gets you 10% off.
This is an iHeart podcast.